Hi, this is John Amundson, and I want to welcome you to the next podcast in a series podcast presented for you by the Psychology Association of Alberta. The purpose of the podcast is to present information that's timely, topical, and even controversial to the membership. I led in with this song because it's by a group called The Videos, and the very first thing I want to talk about is another update on video games. If you go back, oh my gosh, over 5-6 years now, I don't know how long I've been doing these things, but I've touched on video games and on the controversy, on the shifting tides around the impact of video games, and especially the impact of video games regarding amplification of aggression or catharsis around aggression, that is the lowering of aggression or raising of aggression in video game players. So today I want to talk about the latest meta-analysis that has come out. A lot of us... I got my lifetime membership with APA, so I didn't really flee. But a lot of psychologists fled APA based upon the torture stuff, and many joined the Association for Psychological Science. And that particular association is highly invested in research-based practices and knowing what is so and not believing what is not so. In 2015, there was a highly publicized report by the American Psychological Association listing video games, violent video games, with aggressive behavior in children. However, in Perspectives on Psychology, which is a publication of the APS, Association for Psychological Science, they have... found that this is a bit ambiguous, that there's no clear link between violent video games and aggression in children. These studies were between 2015 and 2020. I'll read from their report. Our new meta-analysis found that the evidence base was not sufficient to make the conclusion outlined in the 2015 report. This was the lead author, a man named Ferguson. He's at Stetson University. They found that violent video games do not appear to be linked to aggression. What they do, as most of these folks do, is they look at the quality, the standardized, validated, and well-designed measures in any area of research. And they've said that, that's been part of the problem with the studies that have shown this connection between aggression and video games in children. And they always say we need really well-designed, better designed, et cetera, et cetera. This has been something, again, I always digress into custody and access. This has been said for, 30 years. We need better research on, and so why isn't it there? Anyway, games are now more important than ever for socialization, feeling autonomy, and control during an uncertain time, and for just de-stressing. In other words, there's more video game use now during the COVID period, and it's been found that there may be, and there are, actually, then benefits that are associated with gaming, and especially the online gaming for kids. I have been a fan of the Journal of Social Psychology, Personality and Social Psychology is the journal. And I've also spoken of the replication problem, which is in psychology in general, but what has been reflected more in articles from this journal. I want to go over that for those that have not listened to the other podcasts. Over the last 10 years, there have been many failed replications in social psychological research, and especially... I've just said it over the last decade, but over the last 20 years for sure. In 2015, the Open Science Collaboration investigation found that only 40% of the original findings in the social psychological projects research could be reproduced. And then in between 2010 and 2015, the journals of Nature and Science successfully replicated only 13 of 21 experiments. And this has gone on. A lot of researchers looked at studies from the 90s on, and they found these are very difficult to replicate. I've got the article before me here. For example, in the journal Social Psychology, they replicated 20 different classical studies with mixed results, a number of these have been published very, very early, and they were concerned about these early findings and that have crept into the literature as sort of canon. In a minute, let me go over some of the research on social interaction. Let's see, we all know the Milgram experiment. What they were trying to show there was the pressure of social interaction to achieve compliance in an individual, even in areas that might be outside of their habitual range of behavior or morality. The key researchers in this area, I'm going to say some of the names, and you may know some of them or not, but these are some that certainly go back to my days in graduate school. Ash, Goldstein, Festinger, Schachter, Milgram, and even Zimbardo were all looking at this social interaction. So what they did in this article, they were trying to replicate some research done by Cialdini. And Cialdini had this, what he called a door-in-the-face technique. And the door-in-the-face technique has to do with how individuals, when confronted with a large request, will often then take a second lesser request. And what he did was this. He had his researchers, the research assistants, they would approach potential participants alone on a campus. And they'd ask them whether they'd be willing to take a group of young delinquents to the zoo for 2 hours. Fewer participants accepted that when that was presented as a unique stimulus. However, what they found is that it would increase statistically significantly when they first said to them, hey, would you be willing to work as a volunteer in a juvenile detention center for 2 days a week for a couple of years? And they said, you know, larger refusal rate. But as soon as they said, well, how about just take him to the zoo? There was a greater acceptance or acquiescence to doing that. Okay, so this is the door-in-the-face technique. This original research was done in 1975, so they were looking, you know, this 50-year interval in between, and what they found was they were able to replicate Cialdini's original research. Participants are more likely to comply with a small target request when they are confronted with a larger request beforehand, as compared with when they are confronted with the small request only, or with two equally small requests. These have important implications and demonstrate that replicability in social psychology is very important. Now, the ramification of this is really interesting because, for example, we are now in a COVID period and we're trying to persuade people to do things, right? So you're more likely to have people comply with behaviors that would be associated with, first off, anything that's pro-social. In their research, they found that if there's more pro-social offerings, people are quicker to comply. With the COVID and with the persuasion that we're talking about here, people are going to be more likely to comply with a minor request than with a major one. So, for example, if you were to say to people, hey, listen, we want to ask you if you'd be willing to wear a mask at all times, they would likely be, you know, some would say yeah, some would say no, whatever, but they're more likely to refuse that. And then to say, oh, yeah, well, anyway, the research isn't conclusive on that. It hasn't shown that masks all the time make a difference. But would you be at least willing to wear them, you know, when you're in a public space? You see what I'm getting at? So the idea of the behavioral rehearsal that goes with contemplating wearing in a public is promising. I'm just going out on a limb here because I don't need research showing it does increase mask wearing, but I'm just using this theoretically. But that might be more likely, at least in terms of the face validity of what is taking place, to increase, say, mask wearing. Article also briefly discussed in on the APS website and put it published in their journal. Two researchers were looking at harm and when we would engage in harm in relation to benefit, and they said that harm avoidance, that is, that the desire to avoid causing any harm to anybody else or harm to anything, is generally something that we all subscribe to. So we don't want to harm. That we don't harm things. We don't want to be seen as outside of a social norm relative to the impact of our behavior upon others or even on the environment. But what they looked at were six studies that they were trying to look at harm versus benefit. And what they found was this: when participants choose between less harm for less benefit and more harm for more benefit, they would increasingly be willing to commit to harm for greater benefit. In other words, when harm is inevitable, they would, when there was greater benefit, they were more likely to engage in harm. So it's sort of like, well, it's going to go bad anyway, so let's just jump in. And even though it's going to cause more harm to individuals or to the circumstance, we're going to do it simply because there is a benefit that comes behind that. So a benefit, perceived benefit, and again, they didn't differentiate between benefit to self, benefit to others. So we're just using this term benefit. People are willing to tolerate greater harm. Oh, we'll run out here with Billie Eilish and Bad Guy. Toes creeping around like no one knows. Think you're so criminal. Bruises on both my knees for you. Don't say thank you. Oh please, I do what I want when I'm wanting to. My soul so cynical. So you're a